The beauty of this for us is that we have full control of this. If you're buying a system where we're a big black box and you want to have something changed, then you need to make a service call. You need to have IT consultants. They'll give you an offer. This is what it's going to cost. Here we have guys in our old team that can program it overnight. And next morning, we will run with the new algorithms, so to say. So for us, it brings a lot of agility in both ways, both in terms of adapting to change conditions, but also for the planner in the day-to-day life.
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are in the world. This is the Digital Supply Chain Podcast, the number one podcast focusing on the digitization of supply chain. And I'm your host, Global Vice President at SAP, Tom Raftery. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Digital Supply Chain Podcast. My name is Tom Raftery with SAP. And with me on the show today, I have Philip. Philip, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes. Hello, Tom, and thank you for having me here. My name is Philip Melkas. I'm the head of the global planning team with Velux, a global manufacturer of roof windows. I've been working with supply chain for, I think, 20 years. I actually started out back at a university getting into inventory optimization and doing all kinds of mathematical modeling in these areas. And when I was when I finished my thesis, I was looking out for a place to try that out in real life, and I just wrote out to a lot of companies and then said, who's looking for someone like me? And then I actually entered Velux 18 years ago. So I've been in the same company for the entire period. Wow. But we've been working in many different areas of logistics, and in particular, really much into inventory optimization and network optimization. But in the last 8 years, focusing really much on the what I call the production planning part. So the whole S&OP process, and then also little by little, what IT systems can support this. And over time, I got into management as well. So today, I'm not the specialist doing the spreadsheets myself, but actually working as a head of the department.
Yeah, superb. Congratulations. For people who are unaware, could you tell us a little bit about Velux?
Yeah, so Velux is quite an old family-owned company. I think we have more than 75 years, and we produce mainly windows for the roof. This is the whole the philosophy is that we want to bring light and fresh air through the roof to the customers. So it's a Danish-based company. But today we have sales companies all over the world and also production all over the world. Europe is our biggest region sales-wise, but also America is coming onto it quite well. We have about 14,000 employees and a net revenue just below 3 billion euro last year. So for a guy like me, it's a quite big company. There's a lot of complexity. Yeah. It's a company that's grown over time, and then we have a quite integrated supply chain in the sense that we own a lot of the different processes. So we have a lot of the responsibility for the production all the way up to the finished goods. So when you're sitting in planning like I do, there's a lot of interesting complexity in finding out how those motors and paints and wood pieces and hardware all fit together into the total product. So it's quite an interesting place to be. Yeah.
And I mean, we're in the middle of a global pandemic. I think you guys must have been impacted by this, obviously, with changing demands and suppliers able to supply or not able to supply. Or can we just tell me a little bit about how COVID-19 impacted the roof window industry?
I surely can. It's been a roller coaster ride for us. I think at least sitting in planning, of course. It started in our European markets, and the first markets that impacted was Italy and Spain, which was, I think, also the ones generally hardest hit in Europe. And we saw in a matter of 1 week or so, the sales simply dropped to zero in this market. So quite dramatically, actually. And we saw all other big markets was going down as well. They were not down to zero, but at the same time, governments were coming out with all kinds of lockdowns and recommendations. And we decided actually on a high level in Velux to close a lot of our factories for 2 weeks just to protect our employees and support the local government's initiatives. also because we are quite honestly expecting that 2 weeks of production we would easily lose in no time because sales were dropping so rapidly fast. But then the rollercoaster ride started because we then actually saw some markets just before locking down. We had some small hoarding where we said, so sales went up and then they went completely down. So we said, okay, fair enough. People are probably wanting to having some kind of products at home they can go with. If they are forced to stay home for 3 weeks, at least they have something to do. So that may be explain it. But the problem was that a lot of our markets a problem. It's a good thing for wheels, but sales didn't drop at all. So what we thought was a hoarding was just the beginning of a period with increasing sales. And we were in close dialogue with all the markets, finding out what is going on here. Is this still just hoarding, or is it actually increased sales, or and little by little, some of the other markets came back from the lockdown. So sales-wise, it's have been really, really a period with a lot of uncertainty. Normally, Velux roof sales are quite stable. We are Velux products. Some people install them themselves, but a lot use installers. So somehow there's a natural, I don't call it bottleneck, but there's a natural capacity on how many windows you would sell. And so we don't see big differences in sale, which is making a very nice and forecastable product. But suddenly we saw big changes in this. And the problem was that we had closed our production. Of course, we then opened it again. But we were within, from a planning point of view, where I'm responsible for securing that we have the products on stock, when in this situation where our stock was record low. Our supply was, demand was completely unpredictable because we were talking minus 50% and plus 50% for big markets, which has a huge impact. Our products are relatively country-specific in the sense that the type and the size and so on are actually quite local, even if it's a global brand, but there's different tastes, if you like, between the different countries. So it's not just the same window. So we need to have the right products in stock, and it's been really, really challenging. And on top of this comes then also the fact that supply is not stable here, right? We have suppliers, our own internal suppliers, where we say for whatever reason, they are also impacted by this. And we have production sites which has to close down for not the full factory. We haven't experienced that yet, but parts of the factory have been closed down due to they had a few employees with Corona, and we had to then close down for 2 weeks. And so there's a lot of uncertainty on what is also supply, right? So it's been really, really an exciting period. for us to be in, and
and how have you responded?
As good as we can. I would say we are generally a company that takes a lot of pride in our delivery performance, our ability to deliver on time to our customers, and we have to say we haven't been able to deliver up to the same standards as we normally do, but we try everything we can. For us, it's been normally, and now it gets a little bit more into the area of planning. Normally, we have a monthly SOP process. So that means that every month we review the sales forecast for the coming period, and we have an executive meeting where we sit together with sales, with supply, with finance, and logistics, and say, okay, what is the outlook for the coming period? And we take the bigger decisions in our planning to reduce or increase production, and whole our IT infrastructure is set up to this monthly process. And okay. Right now, a monthly is it be normally what happens in the month happened in over lunch in this period. So we simply had to increase the frequency of these meetings. So we ended up having this coming into a weekly frequency instead. And then we were really also our dialogue with the markets, the way we organize this, that we have a central organization that is responsible for the overall forecast, where we get a lot of input from the sales companies. And that we had to also increase the frequency of course. So for some markets, we even had two weekly meetings to simply understand what is going on in each market, because that's... If first of all, a lot of things when with the politics, different governments deciding what kind of lockdown will you do, that changes very, very rapidly. But also then understanding what is the impact of this. In some countries, installers are allowed to go out to our customers and install windows, And some they are not, and it's a huge difference for us, right? And sure. Understanding this is actually that's something that's is hard. And even if we had the conversation and the input from local guys, we were wrong quite a lot still. But we were better off than not having the dialogue, of course. So we increased the frequency of the whole process to a weekly one, and for us that meant that we were able to. What we produce next week is more close to actually what is going to be sold. In general, our products are stocked. So it means that we do have some buffer in the supply chain. But still, when the stocks are really, really low and sales are high and not according to forecast, we easily end up with the wrong products on stock. So this was our way of minimizing that impact. So that's been... So I think this has been our response, and I think so far we're doing well. Right now, sales are still really, really high, and we are also at a point where our production say that this is our maximum limit. We also had to implement different safety measures in our production, distancing, and also cleaning out between different shifts, and also for business continuity, ensuring that there's no overlap or shift. So if sickness break out, it's only one shift you have to take out, not the full factory. So capacity is limited, more limited than normally. So we are at a point right now where we have said, okay, let's pull all levers, and then this is what we will do, and then it's up to us to balance as good as possible. And so far we are fine, but it's a long summer we have in front of us, and there'll also be some vacation, and we are working with Saturday shifts and have reduced the vacation, but it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, because I've had conversations with a number of organizations throughout this, and it's interesting because I don't know if this is the case with Velux, but some manufacturers, you know, their lines were not set up for physical distancing between employees. And so for them to maintain the same kind of throughput, they either have to stand up new lines, or they have to increase the amount of hours they're producing, or they have to increase automation. Otherwise, their productivity goes down. So is that some kind of trade-off that you've had to make as well, or were you already set up for physical distancing?
It was actually, I think there's been a few cases where we had to modify it, but it's been quite limited. We had the 2 weeks closure where we were using that two weeks to make these small adjustments to be able to produce. So I think in general we have been quite lucky. I would have to say that the way we've designed our lines makes this possible, right? But no one would know that in advance, right?
Yeah, and where from here? I mean, we have, you know, possibly another 18 months of this kind of variability, and then what does kind of post-corona supply chain look like? What do you see going forward?
Yeah, it's interesting because this, I think what we can see now is a little bit going back to the financial crisis 10 years ago, or even more now, that suddenly we are in a position where the world is much more unknown, right, and uncertain. Right now, we see positive sales, and I think we hope, of course, it's just a generic growth, but realistically, we also think this is an outcome of people not going on vacation. They're staying at home for the summer, and they'll probably invest in their house. They spent 2-3 months inside and working at their home office, and it's been probably 2-3 warm months sitting inside. So some daylight and fresh air is probably it's probably a good time for that. But that will probably not last, right? Once you're back in a normal way of life, then you will start traveling again, and you'll not stay at home and renovate your roof. So realistically, our sales will go back to a more normal level. We don't know when it will happen, but so for now, we are in an emergency mood planning wise, but sales wise, we are of course enjoying it. But but from a supply chain point of view, looking forward, I think we will start looking into that yes, we've had a very stable period supply wise, demand wise, but the future seems to be that we've learned a big lesson here, that prepare for the unforeseen as well, right? Because even you think this will never happen, well, it did. And it's very easy to imagine that something similar can happen, and for sure it's just so easy having 3 or 4 years where things run stable, and you forget the past. I think this has been quite a lecture. So I think it will take a longer time before we are sort of forgetting the past here.
Yeah. And I mean, if we look at some of the technologies that are coming down the line, the kind of AI and machine learning and blockchain and all these kind of things, do you see those being big advantages for people like yourself? Do you see yourself rolling out any of those technologies, or how do you see kind of future technologies helping companies like yourself?
It's interesting because, of course, we're looking into these things, and we have areas in Velux where we are utilizing this and making full benefit of it. But actually, in our planning system, it's relatively limited how much we have implemented. And I think that's slightly different to what other people is doing, because it's not like we don't see the potential in that. But there's also for us, it's a long supply chain. We're controlling the production of wood, we're controlling production of paints, and then finally the assembly of the windows, and you have a whole product of accessories around it. And our problem is we have a very, very highly automated planning system. Then there's a lot of these factors that need to be in the system as well. So in our case, when we do a production planning, if there's a part missing somewhere, then the system needs to know, otherwise it will make a wrong plan. So we've actually gone a little bit the other way around and said, let's not make a fully automated planning system here. So we've made a planning system where we actually have Excel as a front end. It is SAP. It is IPP, the new planning platform that you are offering. But what we're really making use of is not all the fancy functionality. What we're making use of is an Excel front end. And that means that from the system, we will get a proposal for a plan. But for us, and I think the strengths in this lies in that we have an Excel front end where the planners can easily just go in and type and edit the plan. And for us, it's really just getting the specific details from the factory. Say, well, this Thursday, we're only going to run a 50% capacity because one machinery is off maintenance or whatever the reason. And that means that then we can go in, easily modify this and save it back to the system. So for us, the most important part is actually not to have the automated part, but to combine it somehow. So you get a good proposal from the system, but you didn't have the agility and the flexibility to go in and make the manual override. It would be perfect if you could have full automation, close the lights, of course, but we just, for us, there's a really, really long way. And it depends, I think, on the stability of your production, the predictability on what is actually, what is life going to be like. And for us, when we have 14,000 employees and a lot of them is in manufacturing, there's also a lot that can go wrong. It's a physical process, and realistically, things doesn't always go according to plan. And we need to adopt that into our systems.
Interesting. It's a very kind of contrarian attitude where everyone is saying, move away from Excel. No more Excel. And you're going the opposite way and saying, no, we want to use Excel because it gives us more flexibility.
Yeah, it's actually, we have quite a few discussions on that in the management group as well, whether or not that was the right way to go. And of course, there's some disadvantages to Excel, that people go in all kinds of different directions. But the way we're using SAP and IBP is done in a way where you still, we get a lot of the standardization in the tool. So it's not just what each planner having their own spreadsheet and they do the plan. Plan is done in IBP, we just get the output out on an Excel front end and allows us to do the editing in there. We also had some functionality which is based on the Visual Basic, actually, really, really old programming software. But that's what Excel is coming with, right? So we have reprogrammed macros that will do standard things, cleaning up stuff, leveling out our production plans, checking out for stockouts, making small adjustments if it's allowed and so on, all kind of things. And the beauty of this for us is that we have full control of this. If you're buying a system with a big black box and you want to have something changed, then you need to make a service call. You need to have IT consultants. They'll give you an offer. This is what it's going to cost. Here we have guys in our old team that can program it overnight. And next morning, we'll run with the new algorithms, so to say. So for us, it actually brings a lot of agility in both ways, both in terms of adapting to change conditions, but also for the planner in the day-to-day life. Of course, we try to we want to make sure that that things just don't go out of the system. So there's a lot of things we do to control people stay in the Excel version of IBP and not just go in a separate sheet and so on. But a lot of it is going a little bit in the other direction than you would normally hear in the industry. Yes, that's correct.
Well, I guess it has the advantage. Everyone knows how to use Excel.
each planner, their favorite tool, everybody will answer Excel, right? Because it so has so much flexibility, and you can easily just copy paste a number of cells and make a graph or summarize it or do whatever you want. You can multiply it by 10% and put it back. There's all of this functionality is just embedded in the tool, and people know it from for 20 years. So they are more or less fluent in the planning tool from day one, right? So it's a huge advantage when you start out, at least.
We're at now, Philip, the 20-minute mark, so we're about to wrap up. Is there anything that I haven't asked you or anything we haven't touched on that you think would be interesting for people to be aware of?
Oh, I think we've been quite well around, Tom. I don't have any other things on my mind except to saying that, yes, we are working with Excel, but also I think for us, one of the next steps is still going into the demand sensing part. I think there's some options there where machine learning can really help us. I'm sure in a situation where like the COVID, it's probably going to be hard for even machine learning to adopt to that. But we also expect a more normal sales. And for us, this would be the area where we would be looking into how can we get this into it? Because the short-term forecasting, I think we have still we can improve a lot still, and we have a lot of benefits there to be harvested. And I think this is where, at least in our situation, that more modern technologies, not just Excel sheets, can actually make a big difference for us. So this is some of the areas we will look into in the coming months.
Super. Philip, that's been fantastic. Thanks a million for coming on the show today.
You're very welcome.
Okay, we've come to the end of the show. Thanks everyone for listening. If you'd like to know more about digital supply chains, head on over to sap.com/digital-supply-chain or simply drop me an email to tom.raftery@sap.com. If you like the show, please don't forget to subscribe to it in your podcast application of choice to get new episodes as soon as they're published. Also, please don't forget to rate and review the podcast. It really does help new people to find the show. Thanks. Catch you all next time.